Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Penny Nelson. The Trump administration's policy toward asylum seekers has been dealt its latest setback in the courts here in California. Immigrant advocates led by the ACLU made their case before a federal judge Wednesday. The California Report's Lily Jamali was there and brings us this report.
U.S. District Judge John S. Tiger was less animated Wednesday than he was during last month's face-off between the ACLU and the Trump administration. There wasn't much more to say. After that hearing, Tiger issued a temporary restraining order, halting the administration's policy barring migrants from applying for asylum unless they entered the country legally. Late Wednesday, as that order was hours from expiring, Judge Tiger ordered a more permanent fix in the form of an injunction. That means asylum seekers can once again apply no matter how they got here while the case makes its way through the courts. Government lawyers have argued that migrants have been flooding the border, creating a crisis, and that they should be processed in an orderly way at proper ports of entry. ACLU attorney Lee Gallant pushed back.
They're putting out the narrative that they're simply trying to channel them to the ports, but the truth is they're not really allowing people to apply at the ports. And as Congress has recognized for the past 40 years, not everyone can get to a port.
Meanwhile, in Washington, a different federal judge blocked another Trump administration attempt to limit asylum, this time for victims of domestic abuse or gang violence. That judge called the policies issued in June by then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions arbitrary and contrary to law. For the California Report, I'm Lily Jamali in San Francisco.
Meanwhile, a state watchdog for migrant children in government custody applauds the federal government's decision this week to stop a policy that was delaying the release of kids to their families in the U.S. KQED's Farida Jabla Romero reports.
The U.S. Office of Refugee Resettlement holds a record 14,600 unaccompanied minors in shelters nationwide, 400 of the kids in California. In June, the agency began fingerprinting potential sponsors and everyone living in their household. The agency now admits that step was unnecessary, keeping kids in shelters longer. ORR will continue fingerprinting sponsors, usually parents or relatives, but not other people in the same home.
It's a start in the right direction.
Holly Cooper co-directs the UC Davis Immigration Law Clinic.
Because what we're seeing are just booming numbers of kids who are being detained. And it's not because there's more kids being apprehended. It's that kids are getting out more and more slowly.
Cooper is one of the attorneys in the landmark Flores settlement that says the government must release migrant children as quickly as possible. NPR reports that 2,000 kids whose parents have already been vetted are ready to be released in the next few days. For the California Report, I'm Farida Jabala Romero.
Moving on, a last-minute Hail Mary petition by law enforcement groups to the state Supreme Court is aimed at derailing access to police misconduct records under a new law set to take effect January 1st. KQED's Alex Emsley reports.
The petition, filed on behalf of a sheriff's deputies union in San Bernardino County, argues that the law should not apply to misconduct committed before the new year. Berkeley Senator Nancy Skinner wrote the law, and she's not buying that argument.
The main existing law that it modified is our Public Records Act. And our Public Records Act basically treats records that if they exist, then they are disclosable.
This law would alter and, in fact, eviscerate privacy rights that existed for peace officers prior to January 1 of 2019.
Police attorney Michael Raines is litigating the petition.
That makes it, by its very nature, a retroactive law.
Raines argues if the law does apply to past cases, it should explicitly say so.
We're going to have a lot of news agencies and perhaps other agencies that are going to be unhappy to be constrained not to get those records, but they are not going to get them.
We'll see. The Supreme Court hasn't yet decided whether it will even hear the petition. It's been requested to rule by the end of the year. For the California Report, I'm Alex Emsley.
Now on to what's going on with the proposed teacher strike down in L.A. After 2 years of negotiations with school officials that have gone from bad to worse, the union representing teachers in the L.A. Unified School District says it's ready to strike. Saul Gonzalez of KCRW in Santa Monica has the story.
Strike, 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 strike. LA's teachers union says if its demands aren't met, instructors and other staff in America's second largest school system will go on strike January 10th. If that happens, it would be LA Unified's first teacher strike since 1989, affecting tens of thousands of households, many of them low income. The instructors want a 6.5% retroactive salary increase and reduced class sizes. They also want larger school staffs and more say over the frequency of classroom testing. LA Unified is offering teachers a 6% pay increase in two phases. The district says if it gives in to the union's demands, the school system will be driven into bankruptcy. For the California Report, I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles.
The NAACP is continuing its week-long Log Out of Facebook campaign. KQED's senior Silicon Valley editor Tanya Mosley explains why.
Black American Facebook and Instagram users were among the most heavily targeted by Russian posts and ads, with provocative memes about police brutality and voter suppression, according to the latest Senate Intelligence Committee report. San Francisco NAACP President Amos Brown says Facebook allowing Russians to sow discord on its platforms is tantamount to supporting evil.
Evil is like a wildfire. Once it starts, it does not stop unless somebody has a substance, some practice to contain it or put it out immediately.
In a statement, Facebook says it is taking the Senate's report seriously and is undergoing a civil rights audit. For the California Report, I'm Tanya Mosley.
Let's go now to a conversation with California Congressman Ro Khanna. He's trying to help fix a crisis thousands of miles away in Yemen, where a civil war began in late 2014. The roots of the conflict involve a president in exile backed by Sunni Saudi Arabia and a rebel group, the Houthis, founded by a member of the Shia minority. With two factions of Islam and U.S. involvement since the Obama administration, the conflict has created a famine that has shocked the world. There are early peace talks now, and last week the U.S. Senate voted to end military support to Saudi Arabia, but that's symbolic until January when the Democratic House is sworn in. Silicon Valley Congressman Ro Khanna has been trying to do something about the situation for a while now. He joins us to explain how the U.S. ended up entangled in this conflict.
Well, we should not be involved. We got involved during the Obama administration because we were negotiating the Iran deal. The advisors to the president thought we had to do something for the Saudis. The Saudis asked that we support them in the civil war. The reality is that no one in the Obama administration would have continued that support in the face of the extraordinary humanitarian catastrophe and tragedy that we are witnessing in Yemen. The Trump administration, though, decided to escalate. They did that because they wanted to strengthen the relationship with the Saudis. The consequence of our support of the Saudis has been thousands of deaths in Yemen of women and children, and it also, as you pointed out, has led to a possible famine that could affect millions.
Explain that connection, how the famine is connected to the war effort.
Well, what we currently see is the Saudis bombing the port of Hodeidah, and as a result of that bombing, food and medicine isn't being allowed into Yemen. This has led to an extraordinary inflation for basic food and medicine. Many Yemenis simply can't afford the food and medicine, and young kids are dying of malnourishment. We've seen horrific images, heartbreaking images in the New York Times and other papers of the fate that these kids are suffering.
Now, why, after such a period of silence from senators, from Congress in general, why do you think there is currently a bit of an outcry about this involvement?
First, the Khashoggi murder opened people's eyes to what was going on in Yemen. Khashoggi, of course, was killed precisely because he was criticizing the Saudi involvement in Yemen. The irony is people are hearing his voice only after his death. Second, the reports of the bombings of women and children in Yemen started to come before the desks of members of Congress and senators. The reporting really has struck the conscience of many members of Congress.
Congressman Ro Khanna from California's 17th District, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Thank you.
Congressman Khanna says they expect the legislation to be considered in the new year. Meanwhile, California leaders from Nancy Pelosi to State School Superintendent Tom Torlakson are taking issue with the findings of a new federal report on school safety. And so are California students who spoke out, walked out, and lobbied lawmakers last year for tougher gun laws. KQED's Vanessa Roncagno has more.
The report from the Federal Commission on School Safety focuses on beefing up mental health services and threat detection, and on ramping up school security. That's not what Bay Area student activists Jake Cohen and Nadia Brooks were hoping to see.
I won't lie, I feel disappointed on a couple different counts.
You know, they just kind of got it all wrong.
Education Secretary Betsy DeVos led the effort, which officials said brought together input from families and school and mental health professionals from several states. But the report devoted little space to guns.
It's kind of like saying that they're solving a problem without talking about the problem at all.
The report recommends arming school staff in communities that embrace the idea, which really bothers Brooks.
This notion of like militarizing our schools, even when we're trying to take guns out of our schools, is definitely like a contradictory statement.
Both students say California's on the right track with some of the toughest gun laws in the nation, and they both plan to keep organizing. For the California Report, I'm Vanessa Roncagno.
Support for the California Report comes from Personal Capital, offering wealth management and online financial tools to help customers manage their money with transparency and control. More information at personalcapital.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And Supermicro, a Silicon Valley-based manufacturer of energy-efficient data center hardware solutions, celebrating 25 years of growth and innovation. Learn more at supermicro.com.
Well, it's been 6 weeks to the day since the campfire in Butte County started, and tonight the show North State Public Radio launched to cover the fallout switches from daily to weekly. But as KQED's Rachel Miro reports, there's more than enough to talk about.
This is After Paradise, a special program on the aftermath of the campfire from North State Public Radio. I'm Tess Vigeland.
You don't need to live near Chico to want to hear more about the awful day the fire struck from folks like Reverend Ron Zimmer of East Avenue Church in Chico.
We had no idea how many people needed shelter, how many people were going to find us.
But After Paradise also serves up forward-looking conversations with people like Paradise Mayor Jody Jones.
We have an opportunity to do things better, to look at some of our streets so that we have better evacuation routes, to look at our building codes so that we have more fireproof structures in town, those sorts of things.
Tess Vigeland, who spent 3 weeks with North State Public Radio helping to launch After Paradise as a volunteer, host, producer, reporter, editor, says she saw the story evolve over that short time.
This is going to be a very long recovery process for the entire community, both here in Chico and in Paradise and beyond. And we're going to be here for that.
After Paradise broadcasts weekly now instead of daily, but there's no question it will continue to serve this traumatized community as it heals itself from the worst wildfire in California history. For the California Report, I'm Rachel Miro in Chico.
And you don't have to live near Chico or Redding to catch the show. You can listen online at their website, or you can listen on ours. We have a link at kqed.org. And that's the California Report for Thursday, December 20th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Penny Nelson. Enjoy your day.